We know the saying, a picture tells a thousand words, but when it comes to ethnographic photography, many of those colonial images erased more words than they revealed. They might show the body, but they strip away the person. Atonga Tem is a Melbourne-based South Sudanese artist, writer and photographer, and she's part of a movement that's flipping that colonial gaze around. Her vibrant, exciting images showcase the individualism of her subjects, hinting at the stories that led to that frame, that moment. So I want to find out about the stories that led to this moment. Atonga, welcome to The Art Show. Tell me, where did you grow up?
So I grew up on the central coast of New South Wales, kind of in between Sydney and Newcastle. And it was a very kind of interesting place to grow up. I feel like it's really influenced the work that I make because, you know, my family, we were kind of just placed there when we migrated here as refugees in 1997. And there was kind of just like nobody that looked any way, shape or form like us there. I think it's changed a little bit now, but this was, you know, 20 something years ago. And it's like a beachy town, people surf. Yeah, I feel like being a coasty kid is a big part of my identity as well.
So what was it like then? What was early life like if you are a South Sudanese family that's living there on the central coast of New South Wales, being a visibly black family? How was that growing up?
I don't know. I think I'm still processing and unlearning the things that I was led to believe about myself growing up there, because within my family context, blackness was not necessarily an identifier. You know, we were South Sudanese. We were Dinka board people from that specific area of South Sudan. You know, we were maybe East African at most, that kind of thing. So moving to a place where racial categories are like way more meaningful and way more less specific, I should say, than where we had come from was very challenging because, you know, I had to learn about blackness from non-black people. And by that, I mean, I had to learn that blackness was a bad thing and that, like, you know, the things that were so natural and so common for my family and for where I'm from had, you know, a lot of negative connotations associated with them.
You spoke about racial categories, and that obviously exists in the arts world as well. So I'm wondering what your parents taught you about coping with those experiences of difference.
I think because my parents came here, or we came here as a family to Australia specifically to escape and, you know, to have opportunity, and was sort of like a survival thing more than anything else. A lot of the ways that they taught us to cope was to sort of see a bigger picture and to kind of figure out ways to not let, you know, everyday racism bring you down, because I think they had the larger awareness that as children, the things that we experience, you know, they're terrible, they're painful. But if, you know, the racism you experience as an 8-year-old will only intensify. And if you aren't empowered to sort of have a coping mechanism of some description, then as an adult, you'll be completely incapable, because this country is unkind and will continue to be unkind. And the more established you get as an adult, the more intense that unkindness will be. And I think their emphasis was more on creating community and having a community that gets you rather than trying to force an outside community to like you. And through that kind of in community, whether that be my South Sudanese community or like a broader black community here, there's power in that that enables you to be able to deal with the spaces in which you don't have power. But also for them, it's a bit different for me in that my goal in existing here and living here is very different to theirs, which was more about survival. Whereas, you know, I've survived through their strength, and now there's like opportunity for me to like thrive in some ways, which means that the way that I tackle injustice or whatever is really different to them. But the roots of that sort of having a coping mechanism and really seeing the strength in your own community, that still stands for me, I think.
Yeah, I think community and connections is such a key and pivotal way that we roll through those difficult moments. But I'm wondering as well if being creative was a way to process some of those experiences too.
Absolutely. So my dad is a journalist and a writer, and he recently published an amazing book. Like, he's an incredibly intelligent dude. He's a really cool dude. Yeah, he's also been, like, really active politically pretty much his whole life, and was really heavily involved in a lot of like the civil wars and like broadcasting what was happening in South Sudan. And my mum as well, she was also involved and was part of like the Freedom Liberation Movement in South Sudan, the SPLA, which is the Sudan People's Liberation Army, and then SPLM, which was the Sudan People's Liberation Movement. So I've got two extremely political parents who have been actively political as long as I've been alive and before that. And my dad being a writer and a journalist, he was also a photojournalist and like took a lot of photos documenting what was happening in South Sudan during the civil wars. They've always had like an outlet for their emotions in some ways. My mum was involved in like a lot of like women's groups, and culturally as well, there's a lot of like singing and dancing that is used as a way of expressing or telling stories or like narrating or documenting. So there's always been this sort of foundational understanding that creativity or creative expression is not flippant, or that more so I should say that it has potential and has the power to be part of a movement and part of something larger than just a pretty picture. We also just culturally love beautiful, pretty things. So there's always kind of just been an understanding for me and my family that aesthetics and creativity and expression are all one and the same with, you know, cultural identity, with like political identity, with, you know, how you feel and how you move in the world. So there was never a challenge in terms of me wanting to like make a career as a creative person, aside from like, how are you going to pay the bills, doll? So yeah, I don't know. I've never really like felt resistance from my family in terms of being creative, more so like in terms of surviving in a tough world.
You were at university, you were studying painting. When did you make the switch to picking up a camera?
So I did 2 years at Sydney Uni and was really loving it, and then sort of felt the need to move to Melbourne to change things up a little bit. I think I just felt like I'd hit a roadblock a little bit. And I was sort of making some sort of photographic work, but not really at the time. Like I hadn't actually taken like photos of my own. Anyway, so I moved to Melbourne and transferred to RMIT, and they just like didn't have a painting major as an option, but they had something called expanded studio practice. And I was like, well, it's not printmaking, it's not jewellery, you know, and it's not like dance, so let me do that. That seems like something that I can paint in. And the whole premise was like to prepare students for being like a studio artist and being in a space where they will be creating. And you can sort of do whatever you want. You just have to be in a studio and make work for the majority of your semester. So initially I was painting, and I did sort of abstract paintings and like a little bit of like sewing and textile stuff. And then my art history classes were like some of the most stressful experiences that I've ever had. Any art history that I've ever done anywhere actually has been quite stressful.
Why is that?
I'd say because the history that we're taught, and I think like there are spaces where it's changing, but the history that I was taught was extremely Eurocentric, extremely like colonial without acknowledging colonialism, and when it did, it was within the lens of like, you know, in what ways did colonialism affect American painters, you know, or like something. And even when it came to like Australian art and Australian art history, I just personally did not have the access that I wanted, or access to ways of thinking about art that I wanted, or histories outside of this sort of like Western canon. I just didn't have access to that. And I know there are spaces that that exists, and I just haven't been in them, I suppose. Anyway, the frustration from that sort of led to me doing my own research and studying. And I think having access to the internet has really influenced the directions that I've gone, because I was seeing all these like incredible, talented, young black creatives around the world who are talking about things and concepts that I'd never heard of. Like, you know, what is Afrofuturism? I've never heard of that. Or like, you know, I don't know, even like writers that I'd never heard of, like Octavia Butler, all of that came from the internet. And I was like, okay, so there are things that I will resonate with. I just have to find them. And that sort of led into, for me, the kind of first point of access I had into a history of art making on the African continent was through photography, because it's so, you know, well documented, and because it ties in really well to like, you know, image making and colonialism and whatever. And I remember just being curious about like, you know, ways that people that look like me, black people, have been portrayed in art, not necessarily in painting, but in like a, anyway, like specifically in photography, and sort of learning a little bit about ethnographic photography and just being really confronted by the fact that like the first images of black bodies that the world saw were ones that were taken by, you know, these colonizers that were really very specifically dehumanizing these people and wanted to capture bodies and wanted to capture, you know, some sort of, you know, Western colonial idea of what a black body is and can be, which is often still, which is often, like in these images, they're still, they're unemotional. They are, you know, positioned in a way that doesn't really differentiate them from like the livestock around them or the trees or whatever. Yeah, and like there's just so many really full-on images there. And that sort of led into like the history of ways that African peoples have challenged photographic representations of us. And that, like, to me, I'm just really interested in that point in history where the lens, the camera lens, was kind of flipped and turned, like when we took the lens and started taking photos of ourselves. Because I think it's like very powerful, but also in terms of the images that came out of that and the artists that made work in that sort of colonial era, like it's just, yeah, very, very powerful to me. And that's sort of where it started.
And there's definitely a shift that's happening with artists of colour taking ownership over their own narratives that are being presented visually. And it's so interesting to me when I hear that you're doing your own research and looking at old photos. I mean, through looking at these ethnographic images, what did it compel you to want to capture differently in your own work?
Yeah, I think the ethnographic photos and that being, I think, more so than anything, that being the first introduction that I had to, you know, historic photos of black people, yeah, it kind of lit a fire in me in terms of knowing that it's, there's just so much more space and there's so much more, like, ways in which we as black people want to be shown and want to present ourselves. So it made me really want to reach out to people that I know personally, my friends and family, who have a relationship to image making and to photography. Like many of us specific, I don't think it's specific to South Sudan, but I will talk only of like my South Sudanese community. A lot of us have lots and lots of photos in our family albums of family members in, they've gone to like a photo studio because there's like a wedding or because it's a beautiful day or because they want to take photos overseas to someone that they're visiting. And it's like an event and it's a really important thing. Like we love taking photos. We love beautiful things. We love decoration. We love like doing our hair and makeup and wearing beautiful clothing. And it was just such a, there's just such a world apart between like these ethnographic photos of black bodies versus the photos that I know of black people in my family. And I just wanted to like recreate that feeling. And especially coming across artists like Malik Sidibe and Seydou Keita, all these other artists that
Malian photographers.
Yeah. And the way that they took photos is like, that's authentic. That's real because it's the relationship between the photographer and the subject is authentic and it's celebratory and it's not about dehumanization. It's not about a body. It's about a person and a personality and a, you know, identity.
Was there anything in particular that struck you as being incredibly powerful when you were looking at their photos?
I think you just sort of see the person's face and the way that they're dressed and you know that it's them, you know, it's like that person has decided to wear this outfit and maybe sit like this. And there's a power in the facial expression. There's a power in the way that often people are looking directly into the camera and like presenting the sort of regalness or something, because in that moment they feel something.
And you've replicated so that in a very contemporary way with the studio series where you pulled in your friends and took photos. Mm. So what ideas were you wanting to explore in that particular series?
I think more so than anything, I was just really proud of like this history of photography that exists, that has always, or just history of image making and art making that has always existed in Africa and across the continent. And I wanted to be part of it. You know, having this alternative to a Eurocentric kind of Western art canon that I could fit into, that I felt comfortable in, and that also, like, is important. I think it's just as, if not more important than this, you know, Western kind of history of art that we learn. And I wanted to be part of that. And being part of that meant being true to what it means for me to exist here and now, like in this country, as this person with these friends and this community. What is authentic about our existence that relates to this history of photography that exists predominantly in West Africa? And most of my friends are East African, interestingly. We all had the same point of reference as well. That was the interesting part. When I said, hey, you know those photos that you have in your family albums of your mums and your aunties? And they're like, say no more. Like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And so, like, that felt really powerful as well, like to acknowledge and celebrate a history that is communal, that we're all part of, and a narrative that that exists that we can contribute to. I wasn't interested in making something new or different. I just wanted to celebrate something that exists, that celebrates us and celebrates people like me. And I guess the way that it's different or new or whatever is that it's like, to me, it's like quintessential contemporary Australian art in that, you know, that's who we are and that's what we're representing and that's kind of what we're celebrating in a way. Without centering like this colonial idea of what it means to be Australian and without centering like a colonial idea of what it means to be an artist or what it means to be whatever, to be black. Yeah, I just wanted to be authentic and to collaborate with the people that I know that also want to celebrate this history that we've come from.
It has me thinking about who you wanted to be your ideal audience with the studio series, because I'm wondering, Atong, what are your thoughts that the work of a black artist should be relatable to a white person?
Look. Well, no, it doesn't have to be. I think that's so silly. I don't think that all art needs to be for all people. There's a lot of art that I think is absolutely terrible and people love it and that's fine. You know, I'm not going to name names. Got my long list here. I think, yeah, and it's, I mean, when it just accessibility in general is an interesting thing because I often think about like the art that I'm making or like talks that I've been to or whatever. Let's say talks, okay, because I often have to do talks and whatever about art stuff or like panel discussions. And I've been to so many like panel discussions about like being a contemporary person, like black, young black people or whatever, something to do with culture and community and whatever. And we have these really like kind of academic conversations using really big words and we're talking about like hegemony and da-da-da and like blah-blah-blah and intersectionality and all these like great buzzwords that we, because we kind of exist within this little bubble, we get what we're talking about and we're kind of low-key like, you know, wanking a little bit, like, you know? And then we're talking about accessibility in terms of community and like blah, 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 but using these really academic terms. And I remember having this moment where I had a talk like that and it was in Sydney and I had invited my mum to it and we're like having this amazing high academic conversation. And I'm like, my mum's real smart. She's very, very intelligent, but like that's not her language. Those aren't the words that she used. English is her like seventh language. And she speaks it very well, but she doesn't speak the language of like wanky inner city, like academic, whatever, whatever. And we're talking about her. And we're talking about the ways in which she does or doesn't have access. And it's like in this very moment, she not have access. She doesn't have access to this conversation and to these ideas that are totally about her. Like, let's maybe switch up how we're talking. And like, who else in the community doesn't have access to whatever, whatever, because of the language that we use or because of like, you know, the terminology and because whatever, the way that we're presenting things. And I feel like that's a way in which like, everybody should have access in terms of having access to the ideas, concepts or whatever. But in terms of feeling celebrated, seen or heard or whatever in the work that we're making, not everybody has to have access to that. I feel like it's fine for you to understand that I'm making this work and it's about blackness and it's about whatever. But if you don't see yourself in that work or if you don't think it's important or if you think that it's un-Australian or whatever, that's your problem, not mine.
Well, because I think so often too, especially across museums and galleries, for black people, the shoe's on the other foot. Like we have to engage. You have to engage with the artworks that don't speak to your experience or your perceptions or ways of being, etc. And I mean, doing these public events and talking about your craft, I want to get it back to self, because more recently you've been doing self-portraits and I'm wondering what prompted you to turn the camera lens on yourself?
I guess it's like a twofold thing. One, it's kind of hard to convince your friends to come over to your house at 5 a.m. because you've just had an idea. And two, I think Yeah, there's like multiple directions that my practice is constantly going in, and I see everything that I do as like part of one big kind of self-portrait or something. Like it all feels connected. And for me, the self-portraits are in some ways about looking ahead, looking forward, looking into the future, kind of imagining a place of joy and celebration that is outside of like mourning and outside of the things that I've looked at quite a lot in the past. And I think also the studio series is so much about history and so much about the past and where I've come from and where my community's come from and things that we've lost maybe as well. And there was, I guess, a moment in my own researching and studying where I kind of started looking into futurism, sci-fi, which I love, reading a lot of stuff by Octavia Butler, and just kind of opening up a conversation with myself and the way that I make work about what's that, what will it look like in the future? What am I working towards? Just as like a person in the world who makes art publicly, you know, what's my trajectory and what does it look like to kind of reach a point of something? Like what is in the future for me? And I think it's difficult at the moment anyway, with the work that I'm making, it for it to be purely celebratory and for it to be purely like, you know, about the images or about the people or about the ideas. There's just so much like, you know, contextual identity within the work that I make. So there's always like a heaviness, I feel. And I think the self-portraits kind of exist in this fantasy space where none of that heaviness exists and where I can just sort of paint my face green and have a nice day, you know? They're sort of idealistic in a way.
Atong, I guess the final question I want to put to you is that we know the South Sudanese community across Australia has had a difficult time with negative media reports, and it's deeply impacted the community. And I'm wondering, when this is happening, how do you take care of yourself so the mental and emotional fatigue doesn't drain your creativity?
That's a great question. I guess I'm still trying to figure it out. I think I'm just really, really blessed to have community around me. And I think I emphasize that a lot because I didn't have that growing up, you know. I had my immediate family and that was sort of it. Whereas now, like, it almost feels like I'm, you know, untouchable because I have this really strong, like a diamond force that's kind of protecting me, and we all take turns protecting one another. And I feel like the amazing thing is if you don't actually have physical access to a community, the internet exists and it's so amazing. I don't think that I'd be making art at all if it wasn't for like 2006 Tumblr. Like that was the most pivotal thing for me.
I love that that's a very vintage now as right? well. Thank you. Yes.
2006 Tumblr. I think often a lot of us for a million different reasons feel that we are an island and that we don't need or have access to support and help in terms of friends, family, community or whatever. And I think challenging that is the most powerful thing that I've ever done, like kind of giving myself permission to like acknowledge when things aren't great or when things hurt and to acknowledge when I need support. And reaching out to my community has like saved my life so many times. And yeah, there's like so many like amazing online communities as well that I've been able to reach out to. I think that's kind of it, because especially in this country when we as South Sudanese people are so hyper-visible, like living in this country is so dangerous. And, you know, like walking on the streets often is really unsafe. Just existing, to feel like your existence is a burden, to feel like your existence is, you know, like as a target or something, like that's really messed up and like very uncomfortable. And I honestly do not think that I'd be capable of leaving the house every day if I didn't have the people around me, people like you who like celebrate and support and, you know, give permission for vulnerability whilst, you know, celebrating the strength in that. I'm very, very lucky to have that.
I think that's the strength of the migrant experience as well, and we definitely feel it as creatives. So before we finish up, Atong, can you please tell us what's on the cards for you with arts projects?
So I've got some very exciting things coming up in Melbourne for 2020. I've got a solo exhibition at Mars Gallery in Windsor, which is happening in February, and I'll be showing some new work that I made that I showed at Sydney Contemporary this year. And I have a really exciting exhibition at the Immigration Museum here in the CBD that will be part of Photo 2020, which is a photo festival that will be happening all across Australia.
And you're with friends. Can you give us a little sneak preview on, what's involved with that project? Who are you taking images of? Is it you?
So this, the Immigration Museum show will be more of a celebration of myth making and the idea that I think mythology and imagination is such a pivotal part of kind of being able to survive in a tough world. So there's going to be a lot of futurism, a lot of just fun stuff. This is me no longer mourning,
2020, I think we will have to have you back on The Art Show. Atong Atem, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Atong Atem is a Melbourne-based artist, writer and photographer, and you can head to our website for more information on her incredible work. This is The Art Show on RN. I'm Namila Benson.